Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
Okay, we have a winner. Congratulations to South Florida. They will host Super Bowl 54.
Miami Dolphin executives and the South Florida Super Bowl host committee there reacting on the NFL Network to the announcement this week that the Super Bowl will return here in 2020. Former Dolphin star Larry Zonka helped make the pitch to bring pro football's biggest game back to town.
I halfway expected that we were going to come out with a Super Bowl, but I didn't know if we'd get the centennial Super Bowl. And that's what I really personally wanted. The Super Bowl committee, I think, wanted that as well, but they just wanted to make sure they got a Super Bowl.
And that they did. It took three ballots, and it was between South Florida and Tampa, but NFL owners finally agreed to return the biggest game to its most frequent host. It'll be the 11th Super Bowl for South Florida and the first in a decade. The last one was 2010. Local efforts to bring back the big game had been unsuccessful in recent years as the aging stadium just wasn't appealing to the NFL owners, and no public funding here was available to fix it. So Dolphins owner Stephen Ross is spending $500 million of his own money on stadium renovations. He gets some of that money back, up to $5 million a year, from county hotel taxes if the stadium attracts big events, like a Super Bowl.
This really shows you that now with the stadium, and it was great for the community, tourism being the biggest industry in Florida, and so it's great to bring a big event like that, you know, down to South Florida.
So the Dolphins owner says the event is coming to South Florida. Geography counts here. Miami-Dade likely will contribute the most money for local efforts. The mayor of Miami Gardens, where the stadium is located, wants to make sure that it's his city that gets mentioned, not just South Beach or Miami, that Miami Gardens gets in the mix. And Broward County, where thousands of the game's hotel rooms are, wants certainly its due. So is this Miami's Super Bowl? Is it South Florida's Super Bowl? What's at stake in the branding? Does it matter? Or what's in stake for you? Call us at 800-743-WLRN. We'll begin with the Super Bowl coming up in 2020, awarded to South Florida for the 11th time. Join the conversation here on the Florida Roundup, 800-743-9576. You can also find us on social media, including Twitter, at WLRN. Doug Hanks is with our partner, the Miami Herald, covering all things county government. And Nikki Grossman is the outgoing Broward Tourism Chief and a member of the Super Bowl Host Committee, joining us on the telephone. Nikki, first of all, congratulations. What a way to go out as the Broward Tourism Chief to bringing back the Super Bowl to South Florida. How's it feel?
It feels like a long awaited, kept promise. And we are thrilled and excited. And despite all the pots boiling right now, this is a South Florida event going to be played in Miami Gardens. The magic name on everything that's going to happen is Miami. But this is a South Florida Super Bowl, as it has been since 2007.
So you're okay with it being branded as the Super Bowl in Miami?
No, that's I am fine with it branded South Florida Host Committee. Even Mr. Ross on the cut that you just gave talks about this as a South Florida event. It is a South Florida event. They needed 4,000, in fact, more hotel rooms from Broward County. They need Broward County's venues to be in the bid, or this bid would not have been awarded. I mean, a $500 million stadium helps us stay in the game. But we had to provide the right number of hotels. We had to provide the right number of venues. And the host committee, which expects to spend $40 million, is going to need some help from its neighboring communities. This is not the way to generate that help.
And Doug Hanks with the Miami Herald, the way that Nikki Grossman from Broward County Tourism is mentioning there is this battle that you reported on this week that came about almost instantaneously as the announcement was made. From the NFL that it was returning to South Florida, and the Miami-Dade County mayor was one of those that perked up and said, no, it's coming to Miami.
Yeah, it's a real conflict because it used to be Super Bowls here were called the Miami Super Bowls.
And that's when it was in the city of Miami with the Orange Bowl.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So, because in 1999, that was the Orange Bowl?
That would have been Joe Robbie Stadium at that point.
Okay.
That's true.
But I think that was still a Miami
Super
Bowl.
That was still branded as Miami. It was 2007 when it began to be called South Florida.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And that was because Broward is becoming a much bigger player, and especially with hotel rooms. Hotel rooms are cheaper up there. NFL needs this great big package of hotel rooms along with event space, along with cash, tax dollars. Broward was giving money. And in fact, in 2010, the Super Bowl basically moved to Fort Lauderdale. from where it usually was in Miami Beach and Miami. So it started became officially branded South Florida, as it was this time, because they needed Broward's help. I can guarantee you Rodney Bredo, et cetera, would rather have it be Miami.
He's the chairman of the host committee,
correct.
The Super Bowl host committee. We did invite him to this program. He unfortunately had a scheduling conflict.
Yeah. So anyway,
I almost had a scheduling conflict.
But she always avoids them.
Nikki, I appreciate your presence here. Doug, continue with this.
Okay,
here.
So anyway, and this time around, in fact, was branded South Florida. And a lot of people were watching that because when the Dolphins brokered this deal with Miami-Dade County, Miami-Dade, led by the Mayor Jimenez, said one of the concessions they made the Dolphins give is you will put both team hotels in Miami. Miami-Dade, you will put the media center. All this stuff was in Fort Lauderdale
That's
in 2010,
right.
And that ticked off a lot of people in Miami-Dade. Yeah. And now Miami-Dade taxpayers are going to pay $4 million to the Dolphins for the Super Bowl, plus $5 million in cash and services,
sure.
whatever it is,
sure.
to put up the game from the government. And so when that brand was sort of put into the public view and all the media coverage was South Florida gets a Super Bowl, the mayor of Miami-Dade, who's facing re-election in August,
sure.
Says, as he said, excuse me. I think we could have said, excuse me, that should say Miami.
Yeah.
And so the next day when they had this big triumphant press conference, I walked in and there were two logos. One was the South Florida Super Bowl bid committee, and it was the logo that we'd seen in the news. And then at the lectern was the Miami Super Bowl host committee. I thought, that doesn't happen by accident. So I said, what's going on here? And the mayor said, yeah, well, I had a problem.
Not a mistake at the printer, certainly. And to this point, the contractual obligations of putting most of the Super Bowl activities in Miami-Dade County is exactly what's cited by Bill Talbert, who's the president and CEO of the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau. He told us just earlier today that it was the obligation, a part of the bid of the Super Bowl that was put together, the venues be in Miami-Dade County.
It's a contractual requirement all the major events be in Miami-Dade County. The Super Bowl city will be in downtown Miami. The headquarters hotel will be in downtown Miami. The media center, where it was in 2007, will be at the new Miami Beach Convention Center. So stadium, Super Bowl City, media center will all be in Miami.
So, Nikki, your response to Bill's assessment of why a Miami Super Bowl?
Let me just say that when the media was located in Fort Lauderdale at the Convention Center, we didn't ask for it to be called the Fort Lauderdale Super Bowl. When the NFL offices were located on the beach in Fort Lauderdale, we didn't demand that it be called the Broward County Super Bowl. We believe that this award was to South Florida. And to South Florida, because there are Palm Beach venues that are involved in this project, there are Broward venues that are involved in this project. And again, the restricted list, or I call it the Jimenez no-fly zone, does not necessarily include, in fact, does not include all of the events related to Super Bowl. During our meetings with the NFL in Charlotte, it was clear that they had some preference to do some of their events that were not on the restricted list in Broward County.
The restricted list meaning those events that contractually were obligated to be placed in Miami-Dade County.
And let me tell you what they are. They are the NFL Experience. They are the Commissioner's Party. There's four of them. There are probably seven or eight events related to the Super Bowl that are hosted by the NFL. And they didn't put them all in there, and they probably didn't do that purposefully because the NFL has worked on in venues in Broward in the past. We've had a great relationship with the NFL, and I think they intend to continue it, and we intend to continue it. So I guess the bottom line is we're going to scrap over whether we're going to continue to be called the South Florida Super Bowl. And when you highlight the Brightline train going from Miami to Fort Lauderdale to Palm Beach, and all of that's in your bid, I think you really went to the NFL and said, this is South Florida.
So,
and you know what? Miami's in South Florida.
In your estimation, Nikki Grossman, is the boss of Broward County Tourism, about ready to retire, as we mentioned here.
Eight more days,
but also a member of the Super Bowl host committee that put together the successful package to bring back the Super Bowl after a decade of missing from South Florida. When we put this South Florida or Miami branded question to your colleague Bill Talbert of the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, he said it was a host committee decision. Is this a matter of majority rules within the committee? Is this ultimately just going to come to a vote about which branding is going to be on network television and all over sports and elsewhere come 2020 in February?
If it becomes a host committee decision after we've been awarded the Super Bowl, I could tell you that the minority, 4-1, the one vote out of Broward County will be to name this a South Florida Super Bowl host committee. We'll see what Miami wants to do. We'll see what strings get pulled, what strings get cut. We'll see how they play it.
Hey, Nikki, can I ask you a question? Have you talked to Bertha Henry or anybody at Broward County about this?
Ms. Henry is the administrator for Broward County.
I certainly have, and I don't think there is an appetite in Broward County to support financially a Miami host committee. And we can go back to the days when Miami was looking for contributions from Broward for the stadium improvements. The attorneys advised Broward County they could not use a tourist tax in a county outside of Broward. And so we went to pursue other possibilities, and Broward County was seriously considering putting some funding into improvements at the training facility in Davie, which is in Broward County. So we've been a player all along. I think that Mayor Jimenez, mayor of Miami-Dade County, clearly understands that that this is something that is a South Florida star. This has been a South Florida event really for decades, even though it was only awarded to the region. Very few regions in the United States get awarded a Super Bowl, but South Florida did.
Yeah,
twice.
Super Bowl 50 was perhaps, Super Bowl 50 could have been a model. It was branded the San Francisco area, and the stadium, Levi Stadium, is not in the city of San Francisco. It is in Santa Clarita.
New York, the stadium wasn't even in the state of New York.
In the state of New York, exactly. But let me ask you, Nikki, when you say, when Broward County may have to, rethink some of its commitments, what does that mean? Does that mean dollars? Does it mean unlocking contractual obligations in terms of setting aside hotel rooms? What's at stake?
Well, I think for the most part, the hotel rooms that were contracted to the NFL, I think that is clearly an obligation in the bid, and I don't think we're going to worry about retracting any of the 4,000 hotel rooms that were committed. Miami's going to end up maybe needing more. I don't think they're going to get very many more contracted out of Broward County. Broward County hotels will get their business at non-contracted rates, mm-hmm. which is not a bad thing for Broward County hotels. It does make a difference when it comes to a financial contribution to the host committee. And Broward paid dearly for the 2010 events that unfolded and took place in Broward County.
What's the commitment that the county's prepared for 2020?
Well, we were asked for $1.8 million. I after we had all the reviews and discussed all of the eventual placements of activities, and I got to say again, I strongly supported that downtown Miami concept
mm-hmm.
because right now, putting all of those events in one place seems to be a favored perk for the NFL. So we were all in favor of that. We're willing, perhaps, to sit down with the host committee and talk about a considerably smaller financial contribution. And again,
about 50%, roughly about 50% of what was asked
for.
I
don't think it will be 50%.
Less than 50%.
I think it will be considerably less than 50%, mainly because we're going to need the money we were going to put into that Super Bowl host committee to attract events to Broward County. I mean, we're going to have expenses related to those events. We're going to need to spend the money. So we're prepared to do that. But I think in terms of a financial partnership with the host committee, we may take a look at, for instance, what Palm Beach County is contributing to the host committee. And I don't know if they are this year or not.
Which may be zero.
Which may be zero. It may be $300,000. But it is certainly not going to be tantamount to a big financial partnership like it has been in the past, because there really is no big partnership.
Hey, Nikki, we saw from Ronnie Barreto talk of the bid package costing essentially $40 million, maybe $45 million. Can you put that in context compared to, like, the 2010 Super Bowl? How much was that bid package?
Well, Doug, you've been asking that question since 2010, and you know nobody responds directly or accurately to that question.
But I can tell you
that it's probably going to it's probably going to be a third more than it was, let's say generously, about a third more than we spent in 2010.
Is it worth it, Nikki? And why? Why does this community need the Super Bowl? And let me preface it by saying, you know, record tourism in the state, record tourism in South Florida, record revenue per available hotel room. Occupancy is close to record highs. In the month of February, Miami-Dade County hotels were occupied by better than 80%. Rooms sold had increased by 1% compared to a year earlier. Here we've gone, you know, 6 years without a Super Bowl, and the hotels and the tourism industry doesn't seem to be suffering.
Well, and that's one of the reasons it's always so difficult to get room blocks for the Super Bowl. It comes in the beginning of February, which is the highest point in our season, highest available rates for visitors to be in the destination. So it's always difficult to get hotels to add room blocks. Now, compound that by saying to Broward County hotels, and by the way, the room blocks are for something called the Miami Host Committees working with the NFL. I think room blocks are going to be very, very difficult to get, and cash is going to be very, very difficult to get. We stick with a South Florida Super Bowl. Broward County gets a little more generous with its financial participation.
But again, is it worth it? Does this, the community, the tourism industry has not suffered in the 6 years that we haven't had a Super Bowl?
Not a bit. Is it worth it? We are not, Miami's not, as far as I know, 100% occupied in our hotel. And a Super Bowl is worth a 1 to 2, and in Broward in 2010, a 3% bump in occupancy. So, yeah, it is well okay. worth the estimates for Broward County, even with a Miami-centric Super Bowl activity, is about $175 million. Now, every community wants that, or else we wouldn't have the bid against five cities.
Right, Tampa, Atlanta, and others. We put that same question
to New Orleans, Los Angeles.
Bill Talbert, your colleague who heads up the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, put that same question to him about whether or not this kind of spending, this kind of community activity and time and attention is worth a Super Bowl.
Why do you think Los Angeles, Phoenix, New Orleans, all of the top cities compete for this? It's about the buzz. It's about the buzz. This is the number one single day sporting event in the world.
About the buzz, and the buzz here is that debate, Doug, between Miami and South Florida.
And it could be this isn't a debate. It could be that Mayor Mr. Mark could say South Florida host committee is fine by me. You know,
sure.
I'm more focused about activities. He wasn't entirely clear at the press conference. You know, I don't think he quite sorted that through yet, down to the details.
And Doug and I discussed the fact that if there is a Miami host committee that's going to be participating with the South Florida Super Bowl host committee in getting activities distributed, that's fine. I mean, we have never done that, and I don't think we would intend to do that. But if that's the mayor's wish, that's fine. But to take from the NFL its awarded Super Bowl to South Florida and create a new host committee that is not isn't even the same geographic destination, although again Miami is in South Florida, is the preeminent destination in South Florida.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is this was awarded to South Florida because all of South Florida participated in producing the bid that was so widely accepted by the NFL owners.
Nikki Grossman, the Broward Tourism Chief, along with us here. Let's squeeze in a couple of phone calls. Dina joins the Florida Roundup from Coral Springs. Go ahead, Dina. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thanks for bringing up this topic because it's something that I've thought about often since 2010. I am a local catering company based in Coral Springs, Florida. And before the Super Bowl, around 2009, my local mayor, Mickey Udine, told me I better head down to Broward and get certified as an emerging business so I could work with the NFL. Well, it was the most amazing thing that happened to my company. So the host of the show today keeps, you know, talking about tourism and hotels, but the financial impact of an event like a Super Bowl coming to town is huge for a small company like mine. I was getting calls from the NFL every day to cater events. Their movie crew, their film crew, they come down here like a month before, and they need catering. And I can't even imagine all the other businesses that the hordes of people that come to support this, to work this event, what they need. And it was a huge boom for my business. for my employees. I had to hire more people.
Mm-hmm.
For my suppliers, for the vendors that I work with. It was great, and I'm sure if it's great for me, it wasn't just great for me, it was great for everybody in my business.
Dina, it's good perspective. We know that economic activity isn't going to stop at the Dade County-Broward County border when the game is in Miami Gardens. Sam joining us
that
from Kendall.
Sure.
Go ahead, Sam. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. How about a simple suggestion that may solve or may be a compromise? And I know that's almost a hard word for people to swallow these days, but how about the South Florida host committee? Home of the Miami Dolphins.
Trying to put everything together. How about it, Nikki? Would you go for something like that?
You know what? I'm good with the Miami South Florida host committee. How's that?
A Miami you can get top billing above the fold, so to speak.
That's fine with me. I need to continue the designation of South Florida's host committee as the place where Super Bowl will be played for its 100th anniversary mm-hmm. in 2020.
I mean, it does sound silly, but someone will have to make this decision. When you look at the past Super Bowl logos, it went from 99, if I'm getting the year right, Miami, 2007, South Florida, 2010, South Florida.
Yeah. Someone will have to make the decision because the television networks have to create the graphics at some point. And long and short of it is they're still going to show Miami Beach on those bump shots out in and out of Miami Gardens, as well as probably the Fort Lauderdale Beach. Nikki Grossman, thanks so much for joining us here.
Mike.
Your short timer is the Broward Tourism Chief, just a few days left before her retirement. She's also a member of the Super Bowl Host Committee, a successful Super Bowl bid for the 2020 game coming back to South Florida. And Doug Hanks, also along with us, is a county reporter, Miami-Dade County, for our partner, the Miami Herald. Always great to have you back, Doug. Still to come on our program, three separate tax hike proposals on the ballot this fall in three different counties here in South Florida, what they are and where the money is supposed to go when we return. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. It may get more expensive to go shopping in Broward, Palm Beach, and Monroe counties. All of them may raise sales taxes to pay for everything from transportation to health care and housing. In Broward County, two sales tax referendums will go before voters in November. The first is a 1% sales tax hike for infrastructure. The second, 0.75% for transportation. It would boost the total sales tax in Broward County to 7.75%. Palm Beach County voters will be asked to add another penny per dollar to their sales tax. Money would be split between county schools, the county itself, and cities. And an added sales tax on alcohol and tobacco is the idea in Monroe County. Supporters say the sin tax there could provide up to $10 million a year to help fund social services throughout the Keys. Here's Monroe County Mayor Heather Carruthers.
We've got a lot of people who are working two, three jobs. We're known for having a partying lifestyle, and that doesn't necessarily lead to great health outcomes. It would basically be, do people support a tax on alcohol and tobacco, specifically with the proceeds dedicated to issues related to health care, housing, children's services, abuse, seniors, veterans.
So how about it? Are you willing to pay more for booze in the Keys? In Broward County, both tax hikes would add almost 2 cents for every dollar you spend at the store. Is it worth it? Where would it go? And what about in Palm Beach County? Let us know. Taxes on the November ballot, sales taxes, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576 on Facebook and on Twitter. Brittany Wallman covers Broward County for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Nancy Klinginer is with us from our southernmost bureau at the studios of Key West. Let's begin, Brittany, in Broward County. Two separate tax proposals, 1%, one penny per dollar for infrastructure. What does that mean, infrastructure, for these dollars?
Well, it has broad uses. It could pay for fire trucks, a new city hall, water, sewer pipes, a lot of the mundane things that cities usually use property tax dollars for, but it also could be used for transportation, sort of street enhancements as well.
And what agencies would be in line for this 1% slice if voters approve it?
Well, that tax would flow mostly to the cities. There are 31 cities here. They would get 60% of the tax. It's an eternal tax. It does not have a time limit on it, like a lot of sales
no
tax
sunset,
proposals
then.
Do.
No sunset.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the county would get 40%.
Meantime, there's an additional 3/4 of a cent per dollar for transportation specifically. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, of course, originally there was only supposed to be one tax on the ballot because everyone figured two would be mutually assured destruction. But this tax is offered by the county. It would go 100% to the county, 0.75% solely for transportation improvements, mainly light rail. We don't have light rail here, but it is planned, and the first loop, the WAVE, is fully funded. So it would be light rail system as well as signaling the properly timing the traffic signals, improving the bus service, that sort of thing.
What about road structure? I mean, when we're talking about transportation in Broward County, are you talking mass transportation, buses? You mentioned light rail buses, or are you talking about additional lanes?
Well, it would be a mix of all of that, but, you know, it's very difficult to expand roadways in a really dense, built-out community like Broward. But they would try to expand lanes, add some additional turn lanes, do whatever they could to get the traffic flowing. But I think people, there's consensus that it's going to take something larger, like a light rail, and getting people out of their cars into buses, community buses as well, in order to really, you know, change the dynamic on the roads here.
Let's move from Broward County down to the Keys. Nan Klingener with us at our Southernmost Bureau. Taxing booze in Key West and booze throughout the Keys. Is this killing the golden goose?
Well, it's definitely cracking an egg, I guess. I mean, one of the great attractions of sales taxes in general on the Keys is that tourists pay about 60% of it. So its residents get to decide to tax the visitors.
And how much could this potentially be worth? I know there's a lot of hoops for a booze tax increase or a cigarette tax increase in the Keys to jump through before it becomes a reality. But what's the end goal here?
Yeah, well, they've looked now and just at a preliminary guess and figured out that if you charged an extra quarter on every drink sold in a bar, that would raise about $6.6 million a year. And if you added a 1 cent sales tax on beer and alcohol that you bought at the store, that would generate $1 million. And 50 cents on every cigarette pack would generate another $2.5 million. So it's a considerable amount of money.
Yeah, that's we're talking about $1 million here. We're talking about some significant money. The proposal on the alcohol tax, it's not just packaged alcohol. So it's not just booze you buy at a grocery store or a convenience store. You mentioned bars and restaurants would be included here?
Well, they don't know yet. What they're doing right now is just asking the voters, how do you feel about this idea? That it's essentially a straw poll because Monroe County is not a charter county. Mm. So any tax first needs an okay from the legislature. And they figure it'll be a lot easier to get an okay from the legislature if they can say, look, our residents are already, you know, have already approved this idea.
Brittany, what's at play here with these counties looking to sales taxes to raise revenue in an environment where property values have been rising, employment has been rising? We know there's no income tax, but we've also seen tourism certainly increase as well.
Right. Well, that's a really good point. What you're seeing is, I mean, public officials, elected officials, just by self-preservation, they're always really reticent to raise the property tax. And so I think what was most tantalizing to them in these sales tax referendums is that they could have an entirely new revenue stream that could go on for decades, and they could still tell voters that they hadn't raised taxes. You raised taxes. And so that is definitely part of this. There are other counties in the state that have been looking at it as well. And I think everyone got really excited here when, in the last general election, voters here in Broward approved an $800 million bond issue for schools, as well as reauthorizing the Children's Services Council, which is a taxing entity. And they thought, wow, you know, maybe the Broward voters are you know, tax friendly right now. So whether that will be the case with two sales tax referendums on the ballot and some cities also have bond issues, I think that's going to be tough.
Yeah, history matters here, though, especially when it comes to this idea of a transportation tax in Broward County. Just look to your neighbor to the south here, Miami-Dade County, did the same thing in 2002. And, you know, here we are more than a decade later. It's really largely considered to be a failed experiment. It was a half penny increase that Miami-Dade County voters okayed back in 2002. Last September, the head of the Broward County agency responsible for transportation planning throughout the county, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the chief there, Greg Stewart, told us that they've learned the lessons from Miami-Dade County.
The lessons that we gleaned, a half penny wasn't enough to really cover the issues Miami-Dade had. If we do a half penny in Broward, it wouldn't be enough to really cover the issues not only our transit operators have, but also our roadway facilities, our traffic lights, all the things that are necessary, our street flooding, the things that are necessary to take care of the public's needs going from now for another 30 years.
That's a big promise in this environment of transportation gridlock throughout all of South Florida. Brittany Wallman with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. As we see the marketing materials and the lobbying for the vote over the next several months ahead of the November ballot decision on both of these sales tax proposals, what are voters really going to have to consider in terms of promises and pledges and follow through with authorities if they do bequeath these dollars?
Well, I think one thing that they're going to be told is that tourists will pay 30% of this tax. And so, hey, let's have the tourists who are clogging our roads help relieve the congestion. But I think as far as promises go, these, you know, they don't really have to commit. They can tell you in general terms, we plan to use it on these broad categories, but they're really, you won't see them saying we're going to build out light rail from on this road. Mm-hmm. So it becomes really hard to later hold them accountable. And if you look at the light rail system that we've been writing about for more than 10 years here, that a shovel has not hit the dirt yet, I think people might question whether they would ever live to see what their sales tax was theoretically funding.
Yeah. Nan Klinger, in Key West, do these represent, you know, a cost shift of these county programs? You know, you mentioned tourism as well, as, you know, the tourists pay the taxes but obviously don't vote. That's the case here in South Florida throughout the counties. But when it comes to these kinds of social service programs that the supporters of this tax increase for alcohol and tobacco in the Keys represent, health care, children's services, housing, is this a cost shift away from a county budget?
Yeah, it is. Right now, they are funding these agencies through property taxes, and they have a human services advisory board that tells them how to divvy up the money or advises them on how to divvy up the money. But every year, the county commission has to decide how much money from property taxes to dedicate to these social service agencies. And what they're looking for here is just a dedicated funding source on the model of the Children's Trust or the Homeless Trust in Miami-Dade.
A dedicated funding source. We heard somewhat the same thing just in 2014, Brittany, when it came to the environment statewide here in Florida, to say, let's pass Amendment 1 so yeah. that there's a dedicated funding source for the environment and protected lands and land purchases and other environmental improvements for preservation and restoration in the state of Florida so that it is baked into the Constitution. These dedicated funding sources, you know, how successful is this of an idea beyond just the initial interest?
Well, you're right in that when you get a, quote, promise from government, there's always a lot of distrust. In that instance that you're talking about, the funds did not, you know, the money is just shifted around and it doesn't end up doing what the voters think that they were told. And so I think one thing that has been proposed for at least the county's transportation tax would be an oversight board. And they feel like voters aren't going to go for a tax because they don't trust government for those very reasons. And maybe that would help push them over the edge.
Talking about the possibility of some sales tax increases in South Florida counties on the ballot this coming November for voters in Palm Beach, Broward, and in Monroe counties. Siobhan joins us on the Florida Roundup from Hollywood. Siobhan, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon to everyone. I think you raised a very important point when you spoke of accountability. The citizens of Broward voted against the courthouse, and yet it was built. Cost overruns of $40 million. I can't imagine what the cost overruns will be at the airport, because I guess they're still negotiating that. The school board has consistently lied to the voters and the residents and the students of Broward County, and any type of accountability for the bond issue, $800 million, I just think when you get, and I am a liberal Democrat and believe in government, but I think there has got to be a better mechanism for watching how these tax dollars are collected and spent, and there needs to be some reining in of the inefficiency and the overruns.
More accountability is what Siobhan wants from Hollywood in regards to the potential of higher taxes. Brittany, you mentioned the potential of a board overseeing these taxes. Does that include both of these tax proposals that Broward County will decide upon?
No, that is only for the county's 3/4 cent. And I think the trouble with accountability on the full cent for the infrastructure tax is that it would be distributed amongst 31 cities as well as the county, and really trying to keep track of what it was spent on and in what time frame is going to be nearly impossible.
So Broward County voters will decide in November. Palm Beach County voters will decide in November. Nan Klingener, Monroe County voters will decide, but the fate is still to some degree two or three steps away from being a reality, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it still has to go to the state legislature after that. Nan Klingener with us with our Southernmost Bureau at the studios of Key West. We've got Brittany Wallman along with us as well. She covers Broward County for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Thanks to both of you for joining us here on the Florida Roundup. Still to come, Venezuela's economy on the brink of collapse, and Cuba okays small and medium-sized businesses. That's all next. We're back on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. The economy of the country with the largest oil reserves in the world is on the edge of collapse. Shortages of food, medicine, basic necessities are really growing daily in Venezuela. By one survey, only half of Venezuelans are able to eat three meals a day. The socialist government wants citizens to plant gardens. Meantime, Coca-Cola has stopped production in Venezuela thanks to a shortage of sugar, and the country's largest beer company has stopped brewing. The country is selling gold reserves to raise currency as it faces billions and billions of dollars of debt payments that it simply cannot afford. And thousands of Venezuelans have certainly fled over the past few years, coming to South Florida. What's the impact here from the growing crisis there? What's the response from the local Venezuelan community here in South Florida? Do you have friends or family there? Let us know here on the Florida Roundup on WLRN. The phone number, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576, on Facebook and on Twitter as well. Miami Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton took the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives this week to blast the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his administration.
It is a sign of incompetence and corruption that Venezuela is struggling with. Empty grocery stores, shortages of medicine, high inflation, and a plummeting economy. Now Maduro is trying desperately to receive assistance from other countries to save his corrupt regime.
Tim Padgett covers the Americas for us here at WLRN. Mariana Tencion is anchor and correspondent at Univision Fusion, joining us here in studio. Mariana, you were born in Caracas. What's it like in your hometown today?
Well, Tom, Venezuela is a beautiful country that not only has the largest oil reserves in the world, it has the tallest waterfall in the world, the Amazon jungle, pristine beaches. Yet the Venezuela I grew up in, a prosperous country that was, along with Costa Rica, the longest democracy in Latin America, doesn't exist anymore. 17 years of what Hugo Chavez called 21st century socialism have turned Venezuela into a war zone. You look at Caracas now, and it's a scene out of a dystopian universe. And living in Venezuela today is surviving in Venezuela. And my dad, who's 70 years old, having to witness all these changes, he calls Venezuela no country for old men.
Increasingly, Tim Padgett, no country for young men, young women, or children either.
No. As you mentioned, the country is running out of money. And this is what happens when a country, and believe me, this was a problem before the socialist revolution took over. This is what happens when a country just produces oil but doesn't make anything else. So what you're left with, in fact, a commentator this week, one of them called Venezuela an oil company masquerading as a nation. Mm. And this is what happens when you're not making anything and you don't have any money besides the oil, and you have to make these very harrowing choices that they're making now between paying your international debt obligations or importing everything so that people can eat.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, they're selling gold, they're selling off reserves, and it's all running out.
Mariana, is this seen, though, as an economic crisis or a political crisis at the heart?
This is economic, political. This is a social implosion in the making.
It's been called a humanitarian crisis.
It is a humanitarian crisis. Every family has stories of family members that were robbed, kidnapped, not having enough to eat, not having electricity. It's disheartening and it's frightening at the same time, because the level of violence and the number of guns in the streets, along with the poverty and desperation, make for this deadly recipe. Remember, Caracas beat out San Pedro Sula in Honduras as, you know, the most violent city in the world this year. I myself have been held at gunpoint in the middle of Caracas over a pair of sneakers. And it's in that moment when you ask yourself, you know, how long can I live here for?
Yeah. And it's certainly not petty crime. But what we're not seeing here, Tim, is large demonstrations against the Maduro government now. We did just a few summers ago.
No, and as I wrote this week, one of the reasons you're not seeing the large demonstrations is because people don't have the time to join demonstrations because they're too busy standing in these epic long queues for food, medicine, other basics like toilet paper, and even if they could go to the demonstrations, the government now is shutting down, for example, metro stations in Caracas that are en route to the demonstration, so that people wouldn't be able to join them in any case.
And at the same time, Tom, you know, the Maduro government conducted military exercises last weekend that included more than 500,000 people, including civilians that were armed. So that is also sending a message to people who want to protests in the streets.
There's plenty in the international community that don't think that President Maduro is going to last this administrative term. But does the regime last?
I think the regime lasts. I think we can't underestimate the regime because they have the military with them. I think we have been underestimating Hugo Chavez and the Chavista sort of regime for over 17 years. And people underestimated Maduro. I covered the elections of Maduro against Capriles at the time. People didn't think he was going to win. He won. Right. People didn't think he was going to stay in power for long, and he has.
So what does this mean for the South Florida Venezuelan community? Venezuela in 2015 was the most popular source of online searches for South Florida real estate. In 2015, 13% of foreign real estate buyers in South Florida were from Venezuela, the largest portion still coming from Venezuela, still so many years after the cracks started to form in that economy.
I think this is huge for the South Florida community because, first of all, you know, Venezuelans are fleeing in larger and larger numbers. We are entrepreneurial. We are creative. We have been used to doing so much with so little in our country that we come here and I think we contribute and we flourish. Take my case, for example. I would be working as a journalist in Venezuela had the government not started cracking down on free press. My husband, for example, who I met in South Florida, is from a Venezuelan family. He's an engineer. Born and bred in Venezuela, studied at MIT. He could have gone back and created jobs in Venezuela. Now he has a company here in South Florida that employs 10 people. So at the end of the day, I think we do contribute to the South Florida community. My family members are buying real estate here, taking their money out of Venezuela, investing it here.
And I don't think there's any question about those contributions, certainly locally. But the question is what's left in Venezuela, this brain drain that we've seen for the better part of almost a couple of decades
now. And now what you're seeing really is growing here is an industry to send survival back to Venezuela in terms of food, in terms of medicine. My father-in-law has a condition that requires medication that he can no longer find. And my wife and I are sending boxes of the stuff every month through...
Your father-in-law is Venezuelan.
Living in Venezuela.
Right.
And there are pharmacies now here that are developing whole systems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing whole sort of FedEx-style companies growing up now to help facilitate this.
And we've heard anecdotally about Venezuelan tourists, those that can still afford and get out of the country, coming to South Florida and arriving at South Florida hotels with boxes and boxes and boxes of Amazon packages that they've pre-ordered to come to the hotel that they can then pack and return with.
My family and friends have sent, at least 50 boxes, everything from Amazon, Target, Costco, Walmart. You have to think that everything is scarce there, from deodorant to razor blades to, you know, oil and milk and baby formula. And I think what Tim was saying is important in the sense that if you are hearing us and you are here in South Florida and you see a drop-off point to, you know, collect medicine or send food, these things are working. I have seen, for example, initiatives like Comparte Una Vida. It's called Share for a Life. They have donation centers in Brickell and Doral and Coconut Grove and Key Biscayne. And they told me yesterday that they filled up 10,000 baby bottles in Venezuela. So these supplies are getting there.
So they're seeing the support in the community.
And if you're here and you see one of these donation centers, don't hesitate to help.
Mariana Atencion is an anchor and correspondent with Univision Fusion. Tim Padgett covers the Americas for us here at WLRN. Maria joining us on the Florida Roundup from Miami. Maria, go ahead. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to speak with you. You know, I'm listening so attentively. I'm from Cuba. This is such a cautionary tale, and I empathize so deeply with everyone. But are we going to float Venezuela and these failing governments, and are we going to try to pattern ourselves after socialism when we know clearly this does not work?
Now,
this leads us nowhere.
Is your question related to the presidential election?
It's a comment. You know, I just see this as a pattern that's going to repeat itself, sadly. It's just an observation as a citizen.
Gotcha, Maria. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, no, I think she makes a good point that socialism and the whole leftist wave that we've seen in Latin America for the past decade or so is on the way out. What we have to keep in mind, though, it's on the way out in slow motion, particularly in Venezuela. And this is a pattern that we've seen in Latin American history. Go back to the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet in Chile. People wanted that out, but it took a long time. Mm-hmm. And the United States right now has got to start working with the opposition in Venezuela the way we did with the opposition in Chile, to start working up a strategy for that long-term exit of this disastrous revolution.
In Venezuela, we know that President Maduro has talked about this secret American invasion that purportedly is coming, which, of course, is laughable, as is the reaction here in the studio. Yeah. But what has been the reaction from the Obama administration? Has there been enough engagement on the part of John Kerry and the State Department here and the international aid community?
There's been no engagement, Tom. There's been an engagement with Cuba, which I think mistakenly excluded Venezuela. And I know that, you know, they're separate issues, but at the same time, they're very much linked. Keep in mind, even with this dire economic situation, the Venezuelan government has kept sending barrels of subsidized oil to Cuba. Right. So as I think going back to Tim's point about socialism sort of waning out slowly, I think that Venezuela still has regional influence because of the oil.
And speaking of Cuba, there is this odd moment this week where the Venezuelan economy continues to collapse in really horrific terms and in terrible humanitarian terms. And in the meantime, the Cuban government sees its fate and okays small and medium-sized businesses.
You're seeing how the world has been turned on its head, in a sense. While the president of Venezuela is living in this socialist dream world, this parallel universe where he thinks that saving the economy in Venezuela means confiscating even more private companies,
nationalizing even more of the economy.
It's the Cuban government of all governments that is recognizing economic reality and realizing that it's got to finally legalize the small and private businesses that it's letting proliferate in Cuba to save its economy.
Are there final lessons between the Castro regime and Caracas that can be reversed here, as opposed to just the oil coming from Venezuela, Mariana, to help support Cuba, that maybe there's some loosening to the ideology?
I think that money talks in that regard. Follow the money. Follow the money. And I also think, talking about sort of what happened internationally in the past month, it's also unprecedented. You know, the OAS's critique to Maduro, that public letter was very damning.
Mariana Atencion, the Univision and Fusion anchor and correspondent, joining us here on the Florida Roundup, along with Tim Padgett covering the Americas for us here at WLRN. Finally on the Roundup this week, cops on camera. In police department after police department, officers are showing up all over social media this week. Not in the way you may think, though. This is the Broward Sheriff's Department doing the Running Man Challenge. From Key West to Miami Beach, Palm Beach to Fort Lauderdale, cops are on camera dancing the Running Man dance. This all started with a video by two New Jersey teens. It's taken off from there to include law enforcement and fire departments across the country and the world, all essentially running in place, dancing, to a song from the 1990s. Ah, the internet. You can see some of the local law enforcement videos on our website at WLRN.org. That'll do it for the Florida Roundup this week. Thanks for listening and your phone calls. The Florida Roundup is produced by Bridget O'Brien. We welcome Bridget to WLRN News. Gina Jordan and Alicia Zuckerman also producing this week. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Our technical supervisor is Paul Leary. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.